And they run through our ass like shit through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
It's ridiculous that they do. That was a huge colony. Well, we didn't miss it. You know, the typical rah, 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 zip, boom, bah, boo.
You don't cuss. You don't drink. So what are your vices?
I have been known to chew a bit of tobacco when I get a little tired or watching film.
Hey, I'm Coach O. I just love my Hummer. I have my Hummer. You need a Hummer? Tell them about it, JoJo.
They've won the biggest championship, and that's the championship of life.
Gas control. Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Welcome into the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter. And I'm joined, as always, by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy, just driving around with the top down. What are you doing?
Man, I can't believe it. So we're one game into the SEC schedule, and Texas A&M opened a can of whoop-ass on Northwestern State, beat them 59-7. What was your main takeaway from Jimbo Fisher's first game as A&M coach?
Oh, man, that a fullback is a good thing. Travion just freaking killed it. Granted, it was against Northwestern Louisiana, but it just, the product looked good. It was a little slow at start, but, I mean, that's what you expect, the first game of the season. But it looked really good. I like what they're doing. And I will tell you, there was a few concerns, though, because if Northwestern's linebackers and cornerbacks are getting to you on blitzes, you're going to have your hands full when Clemson comes to town.
Yeah.
So they better need to get on that film and tighten that part up. But other than that, they looked really good.
Well, I thought it was interesting because I had a takeaway column after this game, and I was tweeting about it, and it seemed like a lot of people were just people are quick to bash and to judge and just kind of say, well, they were playing Northwestern State, and you noted that as well. Like it's not like they should be having a parade right now in College Station, but I think if you show up, you do what you're supposed to do. You win by 52 points. We've seen teams in the past. Not to say that this team is the same as like Appalachian State, but remember when Tennessee opened against Appalachian State, they damn near lost the game. So I think
it's
really easy to take these teams for granted and just kind of not take care of business. And like you mentioned, A&M did start slow. It was only 7-0 after the end of the first quarter, but they scored 28 in the second, 17 in the third. I mean, this game was over by halftime. The most impressive thing to me, A&M rushed for 503 yards. That's what you got to do when you face a team like this. They limited Northwestern State to 21 rushing yards. They held them for 1-for-12 on third down. So not a ton of takeaways from Mike Elko, his defense, because, again, this is what they should be doing. But they got the job done. I think they'll have a lot of confidence going into that Clemson game. And Kellen Mond started slow. He looked shaky. You kind of wondered if they were going to flip to Nick Starkle there in the second quarter. But
yeah,
give credit, Jimbo Fisher. He knows what he's doing. Stuck with Kellen Mond. And, man, he just really – it's like the switch flipped or something in the second quarter. And he was just lights out in that second quarter.
No joke. And I tell you what, man, that tight end is something special.
Yeah, that's another guy I wanted to touch on. He was a three-star recruit they got, a guy by the name of Jace Sternberger. Really weird story. Apparently, he played for Kansas in 2016, left them. I think he went to junior college, signed with A&M. He looks like one of their better players. He only had five catches, but he had 56 yards, two touchdowns. And this is not your new-age tight end that just catches passes. I mean, he was just mauling people, blocking, so this is the prototypical pro offense tight end. It's interesting because Kevin Sumlin's last two Texas A&M teams only had nine receptions from a tight end in a two-year span, and A&M had six in this game. So it's just a different era, and I think it's definitely an exciting time for Aggie fans.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
All right, Shane, so we got one more game pick 'em, one we didn't do yesterday, and that's because we have a guest. We got Glenn Gilbo coming up. He covers LSU for USA Today. So I just recorded an interview with him. We're going to kick to that, and then we'll discuss it and make our picks for LSU Miami, which is on Sunday.
Perfect.
Okay, today's guest on the podcast is Glenn Gilbo. He works for USA Today Network out of Louisiana. He covers LSU and the Saints. He's got one of the best LSU Twitter followers out there. This is an incredible handle for anyone that doesn't follow it. It's at LSU Beat Tweet. Thanks for joining us today, Glenn.
Sure thing. Good to be with you.
So first thing, I got to get this out of the way, is Greedy Williams. He's got to be related to Chris Rock, doesn't he?
He does look a lot like him. I did a feature on that a couple of weeks ago, and he says a lot of people tell him that. People that haven't met him yet, and one of his high school coaches in Shreveport first said that about him. But it is kind of uncanny.
I do want to ask you, you know, the perception, I think, outside of Louisiana is that Ed Orgeron is, you know, on basically maybe the hottest seat in the SEC, if not the nation. What's the general consensus locally on just the support for Ed Orgeron and that LSU program?
Well, I don't think he's on the hot seat. I mean, you could say he's on the warm seat, but they just got done with that, and he has an $8 million buyout. And they're still paying less Miles buyout and Matt Canada. I think that he would really have to have a disastrous season to get fired. You know, something like 4 or 5 wins, would probably do it because they would raise the money. But, I think he's probably going to do a little bit better than that. You know, I think he's going to be in the 7 to 8 win range, so he'll be able to survive till his third year, which could be key because he's supposed to have a very good recruiting class this coming year. It's a great year in the state, and he's ranked in the top 10 now after a 14 finish last year. So he has a chance if he can survive this year.
Yeah, and I've heard people like Bruce Feldman indicate that LSU could be a legitimate playoff contender in 2019. So I think if the program does make any kind of move against Ed Orgeron, they potentially halt all that momentum heading into the 2019 season.
Yeah, I think that's kind of a reach, though, too. I'm not familiar with programs pointing to a year before they've signed the players. You know, and usually the impact of the recruiting class is a year or two later, beyond the class. And you know, Bruce is kind of an old friend of Ed, and is pulling for him, as are a lot of people. I think there's some talent issues throughout the roster that he really needs to address, particularly tailback and quarterback, and because they've dropped, and I just don't think you can pin everything on a class that's not here yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay, another thing I wanted to talk to you, just obviously on this team, Joe Burrow, starting quarterback. According to Ed Orgeron, there's been a very tight race between Burrow and Miles Brennan. But, you know, based on what you're hearing, how close was this quarterback competition really? Because it seems like, based on a lot of the comments from the players, it seems like they've really bought into Joe Burrow, and the same could be said for his former teammates there at Ohio State.
Yeah, and, you know, nobody really knows because we're not allowed to see any part of practice that's significant. I think Brennan improved during August. And, you know, Brennan has been up and down. He almost beat out Etlin last year, according to Orgeron. But then he slipped in spring. But I think part of that is Ed is trying to kind of soothe the feelings of Brennan camp by saying that it was really close because, you know, he definitely doesn't need to have another quarterback transfer. As long as he had two leave, and he's kind of got to keep Brennan happy. That's kind of the way of the world now. And but Brennan is still underweight. He's just not built like a SEC quarterback, and they've tried unsuccessfully to get some weight on him. They're hoping they can redshirt him this year if you know, Burrow doesn't need a backup at all. But, you know, I think Burrow probably clearly won the job is my guess. He's just older. He's more athletic. He's he's got 2 years of being a backup and a couple of spring practices under a better offensive staff at Ohio State than at LSU. So he just had a lot of built-in advantages coming in. Plus, Orgeron revealed the other day that Ensminger, the new offensive coordinator, Steve Ensminger, really didn't start the install of the new offense until August. So the advantage that you thought Brennan and the other quarterbacks would have had during the spring, since Burrow wasn't at LSU yet, that was kind of wiped clean too, because he didn't, you know, it's kind of funny he didn't start more install in the spring. So that was another advantage for Burrow.
Another guy I wanted to ask you about is Christian Fulton. You know, obviously he was supposed to be suspended this year. He got that overturned. I think that was the right decision. But how realistic is it that he can come in and compete immediately? I know he's supposed to be competing for a starting position at that other corner spot opposite Greedy Williams. Do you think it's realistic that he hits the field and plays significantly against Miami?
Oh, yeah, he could start that game. Because, see, he's going through the last two spring practices and practices the last 2 years while on suspension with the first team and second team in practice. So he's ready. And in a skill position like that, I've seen guys come in sometimes with the NCAA clearinghouse with just a week of practice as a freshman, and they get in there. And Christian's been with the program since 2016. He played in 16 briefly, played in a bowl game, went over Louisville that season. But I think you can see Christian, if he doesn't start, he's still going to play a whole lot.
What about LSU's kicking issues? Has that been resolved? Because I know last year, I mean, they were missing extra points. They couldn't make a field goal to save their life in a couple big games. So what's the status of the kicking game there in LSU?
Yeah, well, both of those kickers were demoted. And Ed Orgeron signed a transfer, Cole Tracy, who's a senior, and he's done really well in camp. Of course, he's never played in a major game yet, but he is going to be the place kicker over Connor Culp. And then Zach Von Rosenberg returns as the punter. So it looks like they'll be all right there.
Now, who's going to lead this team in rushing this year? I know you recently did an article on Nick Brossette, the local guy. Is he going to be the leading rusher for LSU this year, do you think?
I think you know, it's going to be by committee. I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire has a little more outside speed. You know, he might be the leading rusher, either him or Brossette. And then they were really high on Chris Curry, the true freshman, until only recently a couple of freshmen hit the wall late in camp. But I think you're going to see those three guys probably early on, Brossette. But you're going to see a lot of Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the sophomore.
Now, what about these Texas Tech transfers I keep hearing so much about? Obviously, you know, I follow the SEC. I don't really follow the Big 12 that much. So I'm not really seeing Jonathan Giles, Braden Fehoku. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. But I'm hearing a lot of buzz about these guys. Do you expect them to be two of the better players on LSU's team this year?
Well, I think Braden Fehoku definitely is. He's versatile. He came in as a defensive end. They moved him to nose tackle with an injury to Ed Alexander. He's been very good there. And Jonathan Giles is another transfer from Texas Tech who's going to start as the slot receiver. He caught more passes last year than LSU receivers catch in 2 or 3 years. Now, he's just a finesse zone coverage in the Big 12. He's not that big, and he's not used to man-to-man coverage, but he's still a very good weapon alongside two really good freshmen who are going to play at wide receiver, Terrace Marshall and Jamar Chase, in addition to Justin Jefferson, a sophomore. And then, you know, you throw in Burrow, another transfer, with Cole Tracy, the kicker we just talked about. They do have a lot of transfers on this team, and Terrence Alexander is a cornerback from Stanford who's probably going to be the nickelback or backup nickelback guy. So, yeah, they have a lot of transfers.
Is there any chance that Ed Ingram returns this year, or is his status just completely in limbo while he's still got his legal issues working out?
I would doubt if he returns this year, and it would not be smart for Coach Orgeron to do that. He's on a felony aggravated sexual assault of a minor. Those are pretty serious charges. You know, he's got a trial date coming up. I would think the other two transfers, because of the charges, and they're all felonies. Drake Davis also is a battery of a woman, Tyler Taylor, the linebacker, was a driver in a burglary. He has three felony charges on him. So if LSU's smart and the charges end up, you know, being true and convicted, you know, those guys should not be at LSU again.
Yeah, and after all those stories came out, LSU players held a players only meeting. Have you noticed any, you know, like a, I don't know if you want to call it like a rally or just a different tone, or have you felt the different vibe since that meeting?
Well, it's definitely unique, you know. I hadn't heard of a players only meeting before the season. Usually they happen when things go wrong. They had a pretty bad August here in Baton Rouge. The only good news was Christian Fulton getting off of his suspension. But, we'll see how that works out. You know, I remember a couple of years ago, Les Miles and the players were talking about how the floods near Baton Rouge really had galvanized the team. And then, you know, they went and lost to Wisconsin and Auburn right off. So you never know about those emotional things. But I do think the fact that those guys are off the team and it happened early, you know, it didn't happen during the season, and they were able to weed that out and they could move on. And I think the players got a little fed up with the bad news all the time. So they're trying to pressure each other to stay out of trouble. And you know, that's team ownership. So that could end up being a good thing.
All right. Last thing here, obviously I want to talk about this Miami game. You posted a video breaking down this on USA Today. You got LSU 17, Miami 14. Why are you picking LSU to win this game?
Well, I think Miami's very good. I don't think they're quite the number 18 in the country, but, you know, I think on paper they're better than LSU. But I think Dave Aranda is a great defensive coordinator. He has a lot of talent. This is his third year. Sometimes, you know, that's a key year for a new coordinator. John Chavis' best defense at LSU was his third year in 2011. And, you know, Aranda is a film rat. I think he's gonna, because this is an opener, you know, I think he's had so much time to figure Miami out. I think he's gonna be able to keep them down and get a lot of talent on defense. I think he's gonna be able to hold the score down and keep LSU's offense in the game.
All right, once again, that's Glenn Gilbo. You can follow him on Twitter at LSUBeatTweet. Gotta follow this guy if you're an LSU fan or just an SEC fan in general. He'll keep you up to date on everything LSU. Works for the USA Today Networks out of Louisiana. Thank you so much for joining us today, Glenn.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Shane. So Glenn really did a great job there, just breaking down the state of LSU and everything heading into this opener. He likes LSU to win by a close margin, only a 3-point game, 17-14. What are your takeaways on this game after hearing that conversation with Glenn Gilbo?
I agree. I think it. I don't think it's going to be close, but I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. I really am excited to see LSU's defense, and you know, just because that's it. That's their bread and butter. So if they kick in all gears and they keep this Miami offense off the field, eventually, I hope that Burroughs shows why they brought him down here, you know?
Yeah, and so LSU is a 3-point underdog against Miami. I'm still kind of surprised by that. The game is in Arlington, so it's a neutral field, but it's much closer to LSU. You know, a lot of LSU people that now live in Texas, so I got to think the vast majority of fans there will be LSU fans. Miami, they can't even get fans at the home games they have, so there's no way in hell they're traveling to Texas to watch this game, I wouldn't think. Despite LSU being a 3-point favorite, I think I'm going to go LSU 24, Miami 20 in this one.
Okay, I'm going to go LSU 27, and then I'm going to go Miami 16. I think they don't get a touchdown until the fourth quarter. Boom.
A lot of confidence there. You gave that one away on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, I think. So it's good to finally get you on the books with a score there.
I think I'm so excited that football's here, and I mean, obviously, I'm excited to see the Balls play, but my second, I want to see LSU Tigers. That's the one I've been curious about all offseason. Coach O's, you know, kind of on a hot seat. You know, I don't know. I mean, they got a lot of, like you heard in the interview, they got a lot of coaches on the hook. So maybe he's not, but I don't know. I'm just curious what they put on the field and see what this new offensive coordinator throws out.
Yeah, and these games that are on Sunday, they're really interesting because obviously it's nationally televised and it's the only game on at the time. So if there's any kind of meltdown like we saw last year with Texas A&M and in UCLA when A&M got out to that huge lead and blew it, I think there's extra, you know, cause for concern that if your team makes a huge mistake or blows it or just gets embarrassed, it's magnified because it's the only game on. It's what every college football fan, if they're going to watch football, they're going to be watching this on Sunday.
Yeah.
So this is a dangerous spot for Coach O, but sounds like you and I and Glenn, we're all pretty confident that LSU gets a win on this one.
Yeah, for sure. Be nice to see Mark Richt again.
He's a good Christian man.
Now yeah, good people.
Now, for anyone that missed it, this is part two. We had to run this a little late due to just the interview schedule, but we ran part one. You can check that out, but I'll just give you a rundown of our winners here. Shane and I both like Ole Miss to beat Texas Tech. We both like South Carolina to beat Coastal Carolina. We both like Kentucky to beat Central Michigan. I'm going with Washington to beat Auburn. Shane likes Auburn to beat Washington. I'm going with West Virginia to kill Tennessee. Shane likes Tennessee to kill West Virginia. Shane likes Middle Tennessee to beat Vandy. I like Vandy to beat Middle Tennessee. And then we both like Alabama to beat Louisville. So there's your recap of week one. And like I said, if you want more breakdown on those games, we got Tony Basilio, we got Josh Vitale, those guys breaking down the Tennessee and Washington Auburn game. So check that out on part one. And that, I think that's going to do it for this shorter edition of That SEC Podcast.
All right, brother. Well, I am excited, dude. I am excited. I watched that Tulane game yesterday, and I mean, I'm watching everything football related on TV. I'm on it. And we had a couple of really good games last night, you know, so it's just, I'm just glad football's here. SEC's looking good. And hopefully we look good tomorrow.
Yeah, and there's a couple games on tonight. Obviously, no SEC games, but you know, there's a few games to get us through the day until all these SEC schools kick off on Saturday. So it's kind of the perfect remedy there.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, Shane, we'll catch you on the next one. And don't forget, if you like all this content here, give us a 5-star heart or a review on iTunes. We really appreciate that. That really helps us out. And we'll catch you on the next one.
Yeah, buddy. All right, go Vols.